on 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show with Aaron the Power Bauer, the Reggae Warrior, Ross Peltier, the Italian Stallion, or Mini, Elliot Minchella, and Robbie Hunter Paul.
Kia ora and g'day and welcome to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show with the boys live in the studio. Yep. How's it going,
good
boys?
Evening.
I tell you what, 124 points to nil. We were wowing. We were wowing last week at York, 144 points on West Wales. But you guys had the challenge and you failed. Well, is it a failure or is it a, is it a positive and a step in the right direction?
I've got something to say about this. If you watch the game back, the referee, not once did he ever stop his clock. Not on kicks. No, he didn't. And then we had to... No, he got to the point in the second half, we were saying to him, stop the clock. We were packing scrums, he wasn't stopping, he was keeping the clock
running. So he was actually mindful.
So if he'd have stopped the clock where it would have been...
Why were you saying stop the clock?
Because we wanted to beat it.
You were mindful. We talked about this last week.
I wanted to. As soon as he got past 100, we wanted to...
Oh, yeah.
We wanted to do it, but then he kept the clock running, and you know we were having to ask him, stop the clock. You should be stopping the clock, and then he was deciding to stop the clock. So you know we could have done it, but
so you're blaming the ref?
Nah,
you're blaming the ref for not scoring enough.
Plus,
points.
Our pitch is about twice size as York's.
So further to run.
Mate, our pitch is massive compared to yours.
No,
yours
I agree.
Is like a five-a-side pitch compared to ours.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Because if you had been on York's pitch when you made that break, you would have gone all the way on your own.
Right. I've watched
isn't
this.
It, no, look, let's be honest. Everyone that's not a front rower in this room, let's be honest. Isn't it the most... brilliant thing ever when you see a front row pin his ears back with nothing but air in front of him.
It just looks so uncomfortable.
It just look awkward. They look frightened. They're like, what do I do? What do I do with all this space in front of me? Because you're used to getting ready to sort of run into the teeth of it, you know, so your body language is different. Yeah. And when you get yourself into space like you did, I'll tell you what, that your belly was waddling in the end there. You were right out there. The backside was going.
Man, I
could have probably made it. I didn't say it was wobbling. I said waddling.
I could have probably made it, to be honest, when I've looked at it. I slowed down.
Yes, you still had about 5 to 8 metres on him.
I heard Pick on my shoulder saying, give it, you won't make it. So I've slowed down. And then I've looked and the defender were further away.
Did he
away
really
than
say
I
that?
He was like, he was screaming, pass it. He was going, give me it. And I've looked behind me and like, I slowed down and... the defender was further than I thought he was. I thought he was a lot closer to me than he was, so I just passed it. But
I was watching it in my backyard going, go on, Bell,
I'd have said I could have made it, but I just passed it. Thought, do the right thing.
How do you get your head around a game like that? I remember, I think I'm right in saying this, we played Salford at home. It was 96 points, and I think it was the game.
Yeah, 96-16 against
Salford. Oh, was it 16? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, there was another game where we put about 50 points past Salford and Manu Fai kicked a drop goal. We had 50 points on him and he kicked a drop goal. But I remember in the end, the game became pretty boring. Do you know what I mean? It became a tough game to play and for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. We were saying at times we felt... I was saying at times in that I felt more tired when we had to defend than I did like playing Doncaster because it was just like you were jogging most of it. You didn't even have a chance to get a second win. So when you had to run, you were like, oh. So yeah.
We saw some stats last night. They had 11 sets the whole game in with the ball. So I can imagine how the game went. But yeah, it was quite
finish after
You know, pretty difficult.
At any time, do you feel sorry for them? I mean, I guess a little bit now. You probably feel a little bit now, but during those 80 minutes, do you ever feel sorry for him?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't have even gone bus if I were them. After 144, and then you know it's half time. It's 60-0 again. You must be thinking, oh, what's the point?
Yeah, them, but they're doing it pretty tough, aren't they? Like last couple of weeks, I felt sorry for him, especially after. But at the start and during the game, you can't feel sorry for him because you. we wanted to win and we wanted to put a score on them.
Yeah.
So
I mean, you guys had, you were playing for first place, weren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this was a points for and against type of game. Yeah. What are you out in the front now, about 60?
I think so, yeah.
And that's a comfortable place to be, but still, being front of the pack is a lonely place to be.
Yeah, it is, you know, we've been here, but this is where we want to stay now. You know, York have got to come back towards the little players, so I think we can stay at top of the table now. Yeah, because I think before the game they were 60 points in front of us and they only won by two. So, yeah, so happy days. We want to be first. The aim now is to stay at the top to the very end now.
Absolutely. A boiling hot day. How did you guys deal with the heat on the weekend, really?
It wasn't too bad, obviously, because it was a bit stop-start the game, so you didn't really get too gassed. But yeah, it was very warm. But yeah,
get the ball back, run down there, score a try, everyone reload again.
I had a spirit of walking back for kickoffs, so.
How much game time did you get, Pelts?
Fair bit, but it was easy. Like, half the time, we'd make a break, I wouldn't even chase to celebrate, mate. I'd just wait for kickoff, I'd wait on backline.
And
that's
true,
no point.
Joseph Buggernar style. That's too far to run down there. It's wasted energy, isn't it?
60 metres to score high five, Mini, after like fourth try.
His 18th try.
No point.
So, Mini, how many tries are you on now? I think Aaron pointed out a really great stat that Kieran Moss has moved back to Hull KR now, leaving you as the top try scorer in
League One player, is he? So
exactly.
I'll take that. I'm not counting, but I think I'm on 16.
I'm not counting, but
that was just
exactly
my dad who said,
16.
My dad who's counting. We've got a wall chart at home, so.
No. Describe this wall chart.
We ain't got a wall chart.
So I can just picture this on Minnie's wall. You know, it's a wall chart. It's going for every season of his career. Actually, starts back when he was back in Minnie's at the age of four. Are we there?
It was just a joke. I don't have a wall chart. But no, I got a hat trick this week. So yeah, it was a nice game to play in. So
16. And Ross, you got over the try line as well.
I'm on 15. I'm right behind him.
Oh, it's tight at that top.
I'm right behind
him. Can you feel the pressure? Can you feel him breathing down your neck?
Yeah, but like Ross said earlier, we like being out in front, don't we? Keep pushing. Yeah. So
you got something to chase, eh, Ross?
Yeah.
What were you not thinking? Were you not thinking when that ball popped up for you? You found yourself with 50. No, actually, it was 70 meters of space air in front of you. Were you not thinking, you know what? I got Mini here. I want to bounce out to 20 tries.
Yeah. I was disappointed in myself that I didn't. I'm still disappointed that I didn't go for it because I reckon I'd have made it.
I reckon Pickers has fooled you there.
Yeah, he's had me.
He's gone, give it to me, give it to me, you won't make it.
If he didn't shout, then I wouldn't have even looked. I would go in, but then he shouted, so I've looked, and then I've slowed down, and I thought, I best give it now, because I thought if I don't make it, people will be like, you should have give it. So I thought, best thing, pass it to a fullback, let him score.
So there's a second half to this conversation that I think we've got to explore, and that is the value of West Wales, the value of these, what they're called, development clubs, aren't they? Mm. If they're still walking along with that title. Just to tell you, basically, it's all the southern clubs. Scholars got knocked by 40. The Scholars have been under development for a long, long time, and I think there's still time and effort needs to be invested into them. But Coventry, Hemel Stags, West Wales, these teams are brand new to pretty much brand new to the game of rugby league. Hemel Stags got beaten by 60 points, Coventry by 90. West Wales, you guys put 124 points on second week on the bounce. Be honest, from a playing point of view, do you think there's much value for you guys running out against them?
For a team like Bradford, you know, by points deduction, whatever, we've ended up in League One, it's not really beneficial for us. It don't do nothing for us, you know, as you can see from the results. But, you know, Dalton Grant, he came from South Wales, so he's a product of South Wales, so he's identifying some talent there. I think teams like Hemel, who I have a problem with, because all their players are based up north. They train up north and they travel to Hemel for a game, so it's not really what's the point. They might as well put a NCL team in League One because everyone lives up here and they just travel down on a game day. So,
well, I'd like to turn this question to you, Aaron, because obviously you look at it from a different perspective, and one of the things that you as a journalist are constantly measuring is the investment within the game. And these investment areas, there's two sort of arguments here. Spread the game, So it goes into new conurbations, new areas of the country. The second argument is actually own the north. Thicken out your core heritage, traditional areas, because there's already a marketplace there without losing that marketplace. What are your thoughts?
Probably can't thicken out the north anymore, I would have thought. I think everyone who's exposed to rugby league up here is probably going to get exposed to it now. It's getting the balance right everywhere else. I mean, West Wales and Coventry, to pick two out, are doing it the right way. They're playing local players. You know, Ross is right about Hemel. They're the ones that stand out, really, because they just sort of relocate every Sunday and go and play 200 miles away. It's tough for West Wales. You've probably got to remember that they played the two best teams in the comp by a distance over the last fortnight. I know they've been beaten 260-0. And they're a year one club, aren't they? You know, they've come from South Wales up to West Wales. Not a great deal of the players have moved across with them. So it's going to take a bit of time. You know, if the game's committed to something happening in West Wales, you've got to be prepared for this kind of thing to happen for a few years. I think it's been pointed out that Newcastle a few years ago were where West Wales are now. And look at them. They're competing for the top five. It's going to be a good crowd at Newcastle next Friday. So it's almost like short-term pain for long-term gain. But I agree, it's not a great look, but... You know, there's guys like Ben Flower as well who've come through, you know, the Welsh thing.
Well,
and
just quickly
the
then, do you think that if we are going to invest in it, then we have to do that properly? That means invest in it. Don't let them go off and do it on their own power. Actually, let the sport collectively come together and make sure that those small areas are nurtured properly.
You've got to help them, haven't you? You've almost got to spend the money for them in the first few years, I guess, because it'd be easy for them to go to Widnes and try and get young players to play, but that's not really helping the game grow in West Wales. They've got to put the money into youth development, and like I say, it'll be tough for a couple of years, but hopefully they'll be on the right path after that.
All right, we're going to go to a break. Now, when we come back, we'll be talking all things Challenge Cup. Start of the sixth round comes tomorrow night, but before we go to that break, let's have a look at the roads.
It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live in the studio with Aaron Bauer, Ross Peltier, and Elliot Mencella. And it's nothing but Challenge Cup, Challenge Cup, Challenge Cup this weekend, boys. Actually, there are some catch-up games. You boys have... What game have you got?
Scholars.
You got the Scholars, and that's because the field was frozen earlier this year.
Yeah, cancelled with snow earlier, so yeah.
So, good opportunity.
Saturday afternoon, Oddsall, 3:00.
Get there, get up to Oddsall if you're not doing anything. Saturday afternoon, it's going to be a massive game. The boys want to continue their role, and now that they're out in front, we've heard from them themselves, they want to stay out the front of the game. Challenge Cup games, though, boys. Let's talk Challenge Cup. It is the most famous trophy in the world of rugby league. The competition itself was born back in 1896, one year after the game came together, 1895. So it does hold a special place in our hearts. Do you guys have any particular favourite Challenge Cup memories?
I was saying, for me, I think it was the Murrayfield final that Bradford won, because that was like one of the first rugby league games I remember ever watching, because I was late to the game. I didn't really know much about it, but I remember watching that game because I knew Leon and that. So,
did you remember what happened at the Murrayfield final itself? Do you remember it getting flooded?
Flooded tonight.
I don't remember it getting flooded.
Man. Yeah. I remember everyone was talking about this flood, right? Mm. And I was thinking, oh, okay, a little bit of water. I went up completely ignorant. We flew up. We didn't go up by bus. We flew up. We came back by bus, but we flew up. Just to keep our legs fresh. And then when I got off the plane, walking past just, you know, the newsstands, and there was a newspaper with Murrayfield. And I mean, we're talking about coming up to the waist flooded. I think, how are we going to play on that in 2 days' time?
What did they do with it?
They drained it. Yeah, I'll tell you what, it was in pretty decent nick, man. Yeah. Look, you could tell that there'd been some issues, but it was pretty good. Played on a lot worse, put it that way. So I thought I'd take my hat off to the groundsman. They surely did do a great job. And what about you, Aaron? What's a standout favourite Challenge Cup memory of yours?
Probably more recent, like being there in a work capacity, watching Hull win it at Wembley for the first time. Obviously, growing up, saw them lose there a few times, and when it got into the work side of things, you sort of learnt about how many times they'd lost there. And No, it was a bit of a running joke, wasn't it, that Hull would never win at Wembley, and the emotion and the outpouring that day, it was incredible. You know, I've not really seen anything like it, and it was good when they won it. For, you know, the celebrations were big when they won it last year, but as I'm sure Leon would testify, you know, to be involved in that group to win at Wembley for the first time, no one will ever do that again.
Well, it was in a way, because as journalists, I was there as a journalist in that sort of capacity. All of us were quietly, secretively cheering on Hull, weren't we? Just because of that narrative.
Yeah, it was a better story. But the year before as well, with Briscoe scoring five, that was one I'll never forget as well. Mm. You know, Hull Cow were atrocious that day, but Lee's got the job done. You've probably been at Leeds at that point.
That's one of mine, like being a part of that squad for that year. It was a big emphasis in the year because the likes of Rob Burrow, Danny Maguire, Kevin Sinfield, they've never won the Challenge
Cup. That's
right,
yeah.
And all year that was like the big one. So
and to do it in that fashion.
For them, obviously, I was quite close to the
squad. You could see the relief, you know, because it's a hunger, but it's more a relief when you do get that opportunity to get over that line eventually. Mm. And you could just see the relief on their face. We felt it at Murrayfield because at the Bulls, we had been to a couple of Challenge Cup finals and come away as the losers. And a couple of them, we were the favourites to win the game.
It's always a bit more newsworthy, a bit more interesting, isn't it, when someone who hasn't got there for a while gets there. I think that's why quite a few people might be pulling for Saints this year. You know, they've not won it for 10 years now, and you know, the chance to see Barber play at Wembley and things like that. I mean, I know they've got Castleford this weekend. Cast themselves, you know, they got to the final 4 years ago, didn't probably do themselves justice, but I think it's 29 years since they've won it.
Yeah.
So whoever wins out of that this weekend, you know, they'd be great finalists.
Well, don't jump in. We're going to have a look at those games a little bit later on. I'll tell you one of my favourite moments, and I had the luxury of being able to compete in six finals, but one of the my favourite moments was the same as yours, Ross, at Murrayfield when Nathan McAvoy went down the right-hand wing, chip kicked Justin Harris, recovered the ball and scored just to the right of the post, and which works in seamlessly because we've got Nathan live on the air. Nathan, are you there?
Hey, I'm here, mate. How you doing?
Seamlessly it worked in there, didn't I? I've not just said that because we had you live on the air as well. Actually, it is one of those great moments because the game was on a knife edge at that time, and it was sort of quite a bit of relief that you did come away and score that try because it gave us, I think, a 2-try buffer.
Yeah, it was. It was a special moment. I have been watching it recently.
It's all over social media, mate.
I know. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on, isn't there? So, in light of what's happening.
Yeah. Look.
But yeah, I remember looking on the inside. Obviously, Boyle was wide open.
Wide open. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
No. Look. I think here, Darren Fleury chasing after him, and Boyle could outsprint him, easily outsprint him. So he's in about 20 metres of space, and you just brushed him, went for the type of play that you dreamed of as a kid, you know, coming up with that slick chip kick. It bounces perfectly. Well, it wasn't kind of perfect because you kind of had to leap, kind of pull back for it, didn't you?
Yeah, well, the aim was to let it bounce in front of me and chip it far enough there, let it bounce, just this sweet bounce off the floor into my hands. But I didn't quite catch it right. I kind of shinned it a little bit, and it went too high, and I almost overran it. So I had to lean back a little bit and to take the ball back in. But before I knew it, I had the ball back in my hands, and there was nobody else in front of me. So it was happy days, really.
It really was, and obviously the relief that we felt as a group, as a squad, coming away with that success, and what a brilliant 24 hours it was, wasn't it? Getting the trophy, lifting the trophy, having a great celebration afterwards, and then travelling down as a group to Centenary Square in Bradford, and to be greeted the way we did, isn't that the type of experience that you want to share with every player that ever pulls on a jersey?
Yeah, it is, and it's, you know, and that's what the Challenge Cup brings to you. You know, it's the whole week, you know, building up to the game is just really romantic, and you know, the whole sort of magic behind it is kind of epitomized by the reception that we got, you know, when we got back into Bradford, and that whole reception was something. It was a memory that you'll always keep with you. It's always something that you treasure forever. So we're just happy to be a part of it.
It was. Now you're getting involved with the Challenge Cup this year. This Sunday afternoon, once all the games have been played, you as the second best looking Super League player of all time is drawing the quarterfinals with the best looking player of all time.
Who's that?
Well, according to Paul Anderson, it's according to Baloo, that's him. Anyway, so you and I have the honour of pulling out the quarterfinal balls.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's going to be an honour. I've done it once before down at Media City and BBC, and it was good fun, good experience.
And you can promise me, because I've done it before, there is no such thing as hot balls and cold balls, is there?
No,
it's a myth. It's an absolute myth. It's a roll of the dice. But we're also doing one thing else together. Also, we're riding from Media City to Wembley itself the week of the Challenge Cup final. Off-road, the UK off-road, a UK red off-road ride to Wembley. What have we done? What have we talked ourselves into?
Man, I don't know. When you first told me about it, I was quite excited about it, but then, you know, I've been doing a little bit of reading up. I'm still waiting for the route to be sent to us. But
they won't send it to us. They've got it, but they won't because they don't want to scare us off.
I'm not looking forward to seeing it because it's all off road. It's going to be bumpy, so I don't really know what I've got myself into. But it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to linking up with some old friends, and just being part of it, raising money for charity. You know, for a good cause. It's going to be fun.
And the other players that are getting involved, you've got Keith Senior, obviously, you've got Gareth Ellis, Paul Highton, Andy Lynch is there, I'm there with you, you got yourself and Paul Highton. We can get up to some fun, the eight of us, can't we?
Yeah, mate, it's going to be the banter. That's what I'm looking forward to the most, is the banter. Maybe a nightcap or two in the evenings just to get ourselves pepped up for the next day's riding, but it is going to be fun, and you know, like I say, it is some old friends that I've known for a long time, so it's going to be an interesting few days, that's for sure.
And I think they say it's about 70 miles every single day, 10 hours worth of cycling, and it's not that it's just physically taxing, but the challenge is more so that it's mentally challenging. All right, matey, thank you very much for your time, and all the best of luck, and I'll see you this Sunday.
Absolute pleasure, mate. I'll see you soon.
Brilliant. Cheers. And there you have it, Nathan McAvoy. We're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we're going to start pulling apart all of the games coming up this weekend in the Challenge Cup. So stick with us right here on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2. On 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live in the studio with the power that is Aaron Bauer, the Italian Stallion, Elliot Mancella, and the reggae warrior himself, Ross Peltier. Ross has just been sharing with us that he's been getting picked on by John Kerr once again. Why won't John just leave you alone? You're a tender-hearted man, aren't you?
He's trying to stifle my creativity. So it is.
His creativity. I love that.
I'm joking.
Oh, I love that.
I'm only joking.
That was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, my God. I'm only joking.
John, you don't understand. When Ross is playing rugby, he's like Leonardo da Vinci. Oh. He's a masterclass artist at work.
Sound like the game caller, Robert. Who's commentating? Picasso.
Picasso, that's it. We're going to change it from the reggae warrior to Picasso. Oh, just painting the
just
paint
stroke. Wrong body.
Just
like my mind, I know I want to do it. I just can't do it.
Wrong town, wrong city. So let's talk Challenge Cup. Hey, yeah, look, the BBC cover the games this week. What does it mean for the sport? You know, when we're covering the sport, one of the things that there used to be a real advantage to the Challenge Cup competition was it was played in May. So the final was played at the final bank holiday weekend of the May holidays. But what that meant was the games were sort of built up backwards, so you had, there was probably 1 to 2, maybe 3 weeks between games. So it created continuity. With the games that have been going on since January, do you think that we still have that continuity of the competition? You know, we talk about, and you heard Nathan saying it, and I said a little bit earlier, the romance of the cup. It's the ultimate prize fight. You get knocked out of the cup competition and there's no second chance. Do you think we take away with the modern game and us playing it on August, which August bank holiday weekend is the worst television weekend of the year. For the obvious reason, it's normally sunny and it's on that long bank holiday weekend, so everybody are out and away. Do you think that as a sport, and when we have a resource that has such strong reach, which where ultimately you're picking up millions of viewers, new people, introducing new people to the sport, people that just consume sport, do you think that as a sport we need to revisit the continuity and the rhythm of how we play these games?
Yeah, for me, I think the Challenge Cup doesn't get exciting for me until the later rounds, which, brutally honest, until it's quarterfinal or semi, I'm not too interested. I probably will watch the games this weekend, but like you say, in regards to the romance, that doesn't come in for me till later. But when you say about the Maybank holiday, if they've moved it back, then isn't that when the FA Cup final is now?
Yeah,
you know,
so.
Football.
It's near then, yeah.
So I don't know whether that would have something to do with it. I think something has to be done because, like you said, there's too long between each game. It loses the spark, doesn't it?
So we have this game this weekend. We don't play another game until July, and then there's two in August.
Yeah, that's for me, that's ridiculous.
Go on, Ross.
I think, if we played the final early in the year, then, you know, teams can concentrate on having that cup run, and then it's done then, and then it's season time, and then, you know, you can concentrate on your season after. And it doesn't have to be a bank holiday that it's played on. Does it have to be a bank holiday?
It could just be
a Saturday. August bank holiday, obviously, for me, been like West Indian night, it's carnival, and it's a massive thing. So I've not many Challenge Cup finals have I ever watched. Come on, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Embracing the reggae warrior. He's not a Picasso that weekend. He's a reggae
warrior.
But
like in London, there's a million people in Notting Hill. There's like hundreds of thousands in Leeds. You know, they're potential people who, August bank holiday, everyone's out doing stuff because it's always normally nice. And, you know, you're not going to be in thinking,
smack bang in there, you know, at the back end of the summer school holidays as well.
Yeah.
It's not ideal, is it? Right? No. How do you guys view it from a journalism point of view?
I think there's an argument for both. I probably would say I actually like it in August, but I wouldn't have it on a bank holiday, like Ross says. I just think you lose so many potential people. It's not just, you know, like Notting Hill Carnival, there's carnivals in Chapeltown and stuff like that. It's everything else. You know, it's 6 week holidays, people go away on bank holidays. Wembley's not a million miles away, you know. You could go on a Saturday morning and come back on a Sunday and still be back for work on a Monday. I don't think it needs to be on a bank holiday. The thing I like about it being in August is generally the weather's going to be better. There's more chance of the weather being better. And it sort of starts the most important time of the year for me. From then on, you've got a run of, especially with the structure now where you just start in the Super 8s as well, you've got a run of like 2-3 months then when every game is absolutely massive. I get the do the cup in quick succession in May. I would go the other way. I would start the cup actually later in the year.
Yeah, that's what I mean. All backload right. those Challenge Cup games.
Maybe start in April. Yeah, don't start in February.
Maybe push the Magic weekend.
Maybe.
Forward.
I agree with the argument, definitely, of having games in quick succession because you do feel like you lose the fizz in the cup a little bit.
Because people do talk about, a big reason for this is because Sky has that influence. But now Sky is covering those games as well.
Well, as the other thing as well, you guys are doing the draw on Sunday for the quarterfinals, and there's probably going to be a month until the quarterfinals.
Mm. It's that momentum, isn't it?
You know, if you pull Saints Wigan out of the hat on Sunday, everyone's going to be absolutely, you know, a crackerjack buzzing. If they've got to wait a fortnight to see it, the buzz is never going to die. But if they've got to wait 4 or 5 weeks, it's just going to fade again. So I would definitely do it like you used to do in terms of having a round every 2 or 3 weeks. But I would do it by where you still have your August final. That's what I'd do.
So, look, here's a question to you all. How special, in the greater scheme of things, when you look at the Super League competition and we talk Super League, Super League, Super League all season long, how special is the Challenge Cup to use all individually?
It's massive for me. I've grown up watching it as a kid. You know, it's tradition, you watch the final, and obviously when I was growing up, Bradford were there and that's the team I supported, so it's always been pretty good for me. But like I said, over the recent years, with it, the structure how it is, I've kind of lost a bit of magic for me because of how the games are spread out. But I do get excited, don't get me wrong, when it's, like I said, a quarter-final, semi-final. But at the minute, I'm not too excited for it. But no, it is a special competition, and it's one that obviously everybody aspires to win.
Yeah, especially, you know, it's like Rugby League's FA Cup, isn't it? It's the historical trophy. You know, one of the most memorable moments for me as a player, I played in a quarter final, you know, Union Tunnel, and the cup were there, and that it were a big moment for me. It were like, wow, this is like what you've watched as a kid. So it's always going to have that romance. I think it can be altered, like Aaron said, do it, either backlog it, make it all closer, and then it'll bring that excitement back. So, you know, like I say, it shouldn't be immune from change. It should be, you know, made better.
Yeah, number one for me. The whole thing around Wembley as well, you know, it's the national stadium, it's all eyes on, it's the BBC. It'd be disastrous if they moved it from Wembley. I know that, you know, far from even considering doing that, but there was a bit of talk last year that they were eyeing up alternative venues and things like that. It'd be a disaster. The grand final's great and it rounds off the season and everything like that, but if you pulled 1,000 people off the street in London and asked them to name a rugby league event, they would probably most tell you the Challenge Cup final. It's the one that means the most to everyone across the country. Like Ross says, it's RFA Cup, and it's, you know, it's knockout rugby. It's the best, you know, it's the best teams winning on any given day. Anything can happen. We've seen some great shocks in the final. You know, could Hull KR get to the grand final? Probably not. But they got to the cup final three years ago. You know, could London get to the grand final? No, but they got to the cup final way back when. So the cup's by far the pinnacle of the sport for me.
And the likes of, you know, well, in my lifetime anyway, what seems like a recent win when Sheffield turned Wigan over, that all-conquering team, anything can happen, can't it? I mean, that's the approach. I remember Henry was, me and Henry were on an international game the week before and we beat Australia in Auckland and Henry was playing for Wigan. Yeah. And the following week, he was going back to Wembley. And I said to him, we were sitting around the pool, we were just on an interview, and we're sitting around the pool the day after the game when we had beaten Australia. I said, man, what about the 2 weeks you're going to have? Beat Australia last night, fly back home, Challenge Cup final, win the Challenge Cup. And Henry was like, yeah, what a week, 2 weeks I'm going to have. Next minute, lost. Wow. Lost. All right, that us, are we good? Yeah, okay, we're gonna go to a break now. When we come back, we'll be covering all the top games of this Challenge Cup round coming up. But before we do, let's have another look at the roads.
On 12:78 and 15:30 AM on DAB Digital Radio and online at pulse2.co.uk. It's all about rugby league. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the final segment of the RHP Show, live in the studio with the Reggae Warrior, or Picasso as he's now calling himself, Ross Peltier, the Italian Stallion, or Mini Elliot Mincella, and the Aaron Bauer, the Power. Boys, let's have a look at the games coming up this weekend in the Challenge Cup. I think the pick of the games has to be the Battle of the Wolf, the Battle of the Doggies, the Wild Doggies, the Wolf Pack versus the Warrington Wolves. How do you see that game going? And are you guys buying into, because Warrington are in some brilliant form at the moment, are you guys buying into the suggestion that Toronto could turn them over?
I reckon it could happen. It could happen. I don't think it will, but it is a possibility. You know, they've been going well.
What is it then? What is it about Toronto that excites everyone? Other than the players and the way that they're performing in the championship,
and the city that they're based in. Everything that, you know, they knew, they've got exciting players. They've brought in a lot of players. If you just got to look at the players they've been getting rid of to see how good their squad is, you know. So
that is a telltale sign, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can see the players they're offloading, they look good. So, you know, anyone on the day could do it.
So here's a question to all three of you: who are their strike weapons? Who are their players that Warrington need to be careful of?
Gaz O'Brien, probably, at fullback, former Warrington player, started really well there. They've got experience in the halves, haven't they, with McCrone? Usual things, you know, that spine's really good, really strong spine. Darcy Lussick as well in the park, to get a player of his calibre. I mean, he was playing regularly for Manly last year. Threats all over the park. I saw Warrington firsthand last week. You know, these lads saw them a few weeks ago firsthand, even more than me, playing really well. Brown and Roberts are getting better and better. And on the edges, you know, Charnley's been incredible. Atkins is playing as well as he has done for years. They lose Curry for the year. The kid Levette comes in, scores a brilliant hat-trick on Friday night.
Interesting. Isn't he interesting? When I say interesting, isn't he exciting for someone so young and yet he's tossing people around?
It's funny because I was talking to someone the other day and mentioned Curry and said, barring Curry in the last 5 years, who can you think of any Warrington youngster who's actually broke through their academy? You know, because traditionally Warrington buy, don't they? Bought Ratchford, bought Atkins, bought Clark, bought Chris Hill, bought Don Crosby, etc., etc. They buy the best English talent. But this Levette, I mean, he's a Warrington lad. He looks like a phenomenal player. And just a word on Clark, who's... I hate to say it. It's tough to say it with Roby still in the, you know, still in the game. But Clark is playing seriously well at the minute. He's pushing hard for a place in the England squad. Really, really going well. I can't see Toronto beating them. Toronto are a good team, spending a lot of money, a lot of talent. But Warrington are on another level at the minute.
Elliot,
yeah, I'm kind of agree with Aaron. Just looking at how good Warrington are, they're the form team in the competition for me. In Super League, so it's going to be a big ask for Toronto to go to their home ground as well and try and turn them over. But I think it will be a good game. But no, for me, Warrington, they're far superior than a lot of teams in Super League, never mind at the Championship. So I think they'll be a good contest, but Warrington too good for me.
So what we're kind of talking about then, it being an indicator for whether or not Toronto is going to be able to compete against those...
The eights, bottom of the barrel, Super
League team.
They're not going to play a team anywhere near as good as Warrington in the eights, so are they? So if they can run Warrington...
Especially at this time, the form that Warrington's in at this time. If they can run
Warrington close, I think they'll, you know, there's four or five Super League clubs that will already be worried. If they run Warrington close or even beat them, they're going to be terrified. they're going to be absolutely terrified of Toronto.
Yeah, they haven't really been blowing teams away too much, Toronto, either. No. Like, the games in Championship have been quite close, so, you know, it might be that gelling of the squad because, you know, all these new players coming in, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, an interesting game for me because people are talking about Lee Centurions and Salford and they've been a really good one, and Cass at home to St. Helens, at home being an important part. But with the Giants' performance last week and with the up-and-down performances of Wakey, the Giants at home to Wakey, this new Giants, this new breath of fresh air with the new coach being signed, Wakefield will go in as game favourites, but could you possibly see the Giants coming away with a win? I'm not too far removed from that possibility. I think the Giants have truly underperformed this season to their abilities. And what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago about the way they weren't hustling. Obviously, last week, new coach coming in, breath of young players injected into the team. That energy comes into the team.
They're all playing for the places again, aren't they? Ross said it last week. You know, no one's safe now. And they were
because the coach doesn't know anyone, does he?
Well, no, everyone's off a blank slate, aren't they? Probably the only one he really knows a lot about is McGilvery because he's just been lighting it up at the World Cup.
Yeah,
and he's back on Friday. Mm. I'd give him a really good chance, actually. Wakefield have got some bad injuries. I think that's, you know, some stuff's going to come out about one of their big players having a really bad injury over the next few hours or so.
Wow, that's normally a pretty good indicator, isn't it?
Why don't we break it on the RHB show?
We feel left out now. Let's
break that news on live on air to the people.
Watch this space.
No, he's revolving information.
They've got some bad injuries.
Handbrake's gone on.
So, Giants at home, you know, I know they weren't great by all accounts last week, but they got a win. You know, it's something to build from. It's a starting block. And again, the Cup, anything can happen. I think the squad, McGilvery's back, I think, which is massive. Brough comes back in for the young lad
McGilvery
who was playing.
McGilvery is massive. Yeah. Is massive. I mean, people think of his finishing power, but
as well
I think
week.
It's more. It's more. Jermaine is more important actually to the starter sets than he is to finishing.
And they're not far off getting Leroy back as well. Those two are just huge for Huddersfield. You know, once they get them two back, they'll fly. So I give them a chance. There's not many. There's eight games this weekend. If you're being brutally honest, there's probably only Whitehaven going to Catalans that is the only formality. Catalans are improving. I think it'd be a step too far for Whitehaven. The other seven, really struggle to call them all. Mm. Great round of games, this.
Mm. Lee Centurions at home, Salford.
Yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? Could go either way.
Because Lee Centurions have found their formula.
Yeah, they've started to find some formula. Mm-hmm. They had a rocky start to season, but they're starting to find some form. Salford, you know, they're starting to...
This could be a nice game.
Think about it. Lee Centurions went down to London last week and put 40 points on them. Mm. Yeah, they let go 30 points, so they've still got to sort out their defence, they put 40 points on London in London. Yeah. That's no mean task.
I think these bottom four of Super League are going to be watching the Warrington and the Salford game real close, because Toronto and Lee are them two teams who you could see causing upset later in the year.
Mm. So but how's the game going to go?
I'll go Lee. I love an underdog, so I'll go Lee. Yeah.
Lee, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go Lee as well. I think they'll do him.
I fancy Lee.
At home?
Yeah, I do. I fancy Lee. Yeah.
Get a big crowd, I think. Yeah, I think Lee for me.
Mm. All right, well, let's move on to the next game. Fev at home to Hull. That's a tasty one, because obviously injuries to the defending champs, Max Need out, which is a big, big, big blow.
And Kelly as well. So they're going to be playing Tua, Mavave and Connor in the halves by the looks of it. So they're down to the bare bones in terms of the pivots.
But in saying that, both of them have a lot of experience in those positions. No continuity with the rest of the team, which is probably important.
I think Hull's size will probably get them over the line tomorrow night. Big pack, massive pack. The likes of Taylor, Green, Mickey Payer. Some huge size in that pack. Manu, Minicello, even their edges are huge. Westerman's obviously back in now. He played last weekend. So, yeah, Fev will give them a real go. This is a good Featherstone team. Mm-hmm. You know, you could probably argue that there's as strong a Fev spine as there is a Hull spine with how disjointed Hull are. But
one of Fev's players is...
Luke Briscoe, it's going to break the record. Yeah.
Does the cup games count?
Yeah. Any competitive game, yeah.
Who will he go up against?
The winger.
What side does he play on?
He's on the right.
So he'll be going up against Hull's left, which is Talanoa.
Yeah.
Talanoa's
good,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, Talanoa. You know what I mean?
That's an interesting one. Obviously, there's a lot of attention around Luke Briscoe and obviously his try scoring efforts. How many games?
17.
Yeah, it is. 17.
Yeah, 16 or 17.
Which is absolutely brilliant. Probably, but
his pie chart at home must be bigger than mine.
I can tell you now. Talanoa will be at home now thinking about that.
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to do it on my watch.
Nah, I hope he does. I hope he breaks the record, just because, it'd be good to see him, wouldn't it? Especially that in Championship. Good luck to him.
That'd be my mindset, though. No one get a world record past me. That'd be my mindset. Just spoil
the
party.
I'd just love to
ruin the party.
The competitor in me would want to rule that out. Okay, so we're into the last minute. Cass at home to Saints.
If Ben Barber's playing, Saints have got it.
Yeah, just with Barber alone, I think. And Cass are busted as well. I mean,
what do Cass have to do then?
Stop Ben Barber.
Yeah, it's literally. But they've got to start well.
So to stop Ben Barber, you've got to stop them in the middle of the park, don't you?
The back three.
That's where it all sits up.
The back three, St. Helens, Makinson and Grace, run the ball hard, carry the ball hard. If they don't start well, Cass, it could be a bit of an ugly afternoon. I'm backing Saints.
Yeah, no one stopped Ben Barber yet, so I can't see it happening. And Saints win for me.
Yeah, Saints win. There's no way to stop Ben Barber yet. So.
Ben Barber is box office, isn't he? All right, the boys up at Otto Stadium this Saturday afternoon, taking on London Scholars, so we wish them all the best of luck. My thank you for you guys being in the studio once again, and my thank you for wherever you've been listening. That was us. That was RHP Show, and we love you.
Listen back to today's show and all previous Robbie Hunter Paul shows at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.